There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 188. It is upon us. Today is the launch day for the Nerdist channel on YouTube. That's youtube.com/Nerdist. We've been working really hard on this for several months. We're going to have a ton of programming rolling out in the coming months. Today, my show, Chris Hardwick's All-Star Celebrity Bowling, launches. We bowl Team Machinima. Tomorrow, face-to-face with Weird Al Yankovic. That's Tuesday, April 3rd. And then Comic Book Club Live, Ain't It Cool News with Harry Knowles, Weird Shit from Japan, and Kids in the Hall, all launching this week. In addition to, we're pulling in all the Hard and Firm videos onto the Nerdist channel as well. And we'll have some new stuff there on the H&P front soon. But really, this is a thing that we're super, super, super excited about, and I've been working really hard on, and I hope you like it. You know, we're going to see if people are interested in watching television-style programming on the web. So please go to youtube.com/Nerdist, click subscribe. It would be tremendously helpful to us and allow us to keep creating programming throughout the year. We're going to have shows like Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson, shows from Rob Zombie, shows covering cosplay, technology. Neil Patrick Harris is doing a puppet show. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff. So please, please, please click subscribe so we can keep making more of it. I would like to say that this episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Amazon.com, and we're going to put a little Amazon badge on the post for this podcast on Nerdist.com. So if you just click on that Amazon badge and then go shop on Amazon as you normally would, anything you buy, a little bit of that will go to supporting the Nerdist Podcast. So go ahead and do that if you want to. I pretty much am afraid of stores anymore. I shop on Amazon almost exclusively. I just hate lines and crowds. And yet, I spend most of my time in airports. So if there was any way that Amazon could teleport me to places, then that'd be sweet. But until that happens, I'll just buy things from them and still go to the airport. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is, Marc Maron is a guy who really has done amazing things, not only with stand-up, but with podcasting, and I always feel like there's a little bit of a healthy competition between us, but not in the I want to salt the earth kind of competition, just to like, you know, he's a guy that makes sure that I try to step up my game as much as possible, because I know that Maron's out there doing amazing things in the world of podcasting, and also in stand-up comedy, and so, you know, it's a real honor to have him on. I thought he hated me for years. Actually, I think he did hate me for years. We talked about this when I went on his show. But I think I can now comfortably say that we're pals, and I'm glad we are. And this episode was incredibly enlightening and fun, and I actually came away from it learning about podcasting and learning about stand-up and learning about stuff as myself as a stand-up. So I don't know. It's just really cool to be on with an upperclassman like Maron. I still feel like a freshman. I still feel like a freshman in this game. And Maron's a senior. He's really cool, and he just hangs out in the lunchroom and smokes cigarettes. And then I'm in the chess club, and I'm trying not to get beaten up. So here's the Nerdist Podcast episode number 188 with WTFs and comedies, Marc Maron.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Blah, 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 blah.
I should bring a code.
Recording.
Right?
All right, I've started recording, but we can without cut Jonah? Off this front part out. Well, he's not here. What are we gonna do?
All right, fair enough.
Maren's gotta go. Man's gotta be someplace.
No,
so
I'm all right. I don't have to be there till 7:15.
Oh, okay.
Look at him working the dial.
He knows how to work this shit.
Got a little short over here. Got a little short.
Is it?
I got him all right.
You want to use this one?
No. I don't think it's that. I think it's the connection between that and the other thing. See, I don't know how to
fix
to talk about sure. plugs. Like, what is that? 3/4?
That's a 1/4 inch.
That's a 1/4 inch. Yeah. And what plugs into it?
An eighth inch.
Well, 3.5 millimeter.
3.5 millimeter.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. See, that's my bag. I go, you know, the earphone kind for the for a stereo,
earphone.
And then a little earphone plug.
I say guitar to headphone.
That's good. Guitar to headphone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or new headphone into classic radio headphone. Right.
Classic. But these aren't RCA plugs. RCA plugs are the things that go in the back of the stereo.
Boom. He's
right.
Got it.
Yeah.
He's got it.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know, right?
The RCA cables. Now you need to know component cables. You need to know HDMI cables. You need
No, that's completely not.
There's S video.
That for me, all that
gone.
All that is totally like the thing that goes in this hole.
That's all you need.
I need a this to a this.
Yeah, I need the thing that goes in. I don't know if I have a hole for this.
There's
that's
no
another.
Wait, Jonah Reyes brought headphones
for
everyone.
Headphones? Thank you, Jonah.
I thought everyone should have them.
Hey, Jonah Ray, the headphones bunny.
Do you have the adapter, Jonah?
Someone sent me some really nice headphones.
Oh, really?
Okay, I have one.
People must send you all kinds of stuff now, right?
A lot of stuff. A lot of personal stuff. Interesting artwork. I get a lot of interesting folk art from people.
Yeah.
Mosaics, wood burnings, wood. What do you call that when you wood burn?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Wood burning,
some guy did a wood burn in my face.
Pieces of skin.
Someone gave me a set of candles that he made with his teeth. He carved the candles with his teeth. But no, I talked about losing my headphones and some the management of Reza. Is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
Sent me the Reza headphones.
We got a block.
I'm reviewing those next week.
We got a block of a human tit cheese carved in our with the logo.
No,
that'd be amazing
though. We never got that.
Human tit cheese. That's rough.
That would be.
You know, breast milk in general kind of gives me the willies.
There was a restaurant in Santa Monica that was for a little while. There was a special, and it was made from his wife's breast milk.
In England, they were serving breast milk ice cream, and then they shut it down because that's not healthy.
Sweatshop of lactating women.
I'm chewing all I can.
That's where I should work.
Hands in the hen house.
It just looks like naked lunch. Just all these creatures just like strapped up, and those people are just like siphoning.
We need more for the peanut butter cup.
Yeah. More mugwump cheese.
It's a scene from the new Terry Gilliam movie.
Oh, that'd be great.
You got a lot of pills there, Mark.
These are vitamins I thought I was going to take this morning. And then I thought I was going to take. When I leave my house, I seem to think I'm going camping.
No,
you never know what's going to happen.
So you have literally every vitamin that a human being could take.
Well, my dad, who at the time was very into vitamins because he thought it was curing his depression, but since he's gotten depressed again, has turned his back on them, got me on these. And I'm not sure. I know these are fish oil. This is phosphatidylcholine, good for the head, magnesium, vitamin D, little baby aspirin because I'm old. DHEA and these are vitamin C's because I got a little bit of cold.
Where are the blue ones?
The blue ones are they're called Memory Revitalizer.
That's what
they're
you
take. Made by some dude that was a friend of my dad's who my dad refuses to admit he might be a crackpot. And clearly, you know, I am also in denial.
Is that the pill you take to see the Matrix or is that the one you take?
I am in the Matrix now. I don't know what you guys are doing.
You take the red pill to see the Matrix and I think you take the blue pill to
this
wake up
Matrix.
In your bed.
I took the one with a happy face on it. What's that one?
That means you get to be on a podcast. You took the podcast pill.
Great.
Sorry.
So what happens now? Do you guys start it in some way, or are we halfway done?
Oh, okay.
Are we halfway done?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast.
This is the most unbranded event that I've ever been to.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast.
For a Chris Hardwick joint. I was expecting a swag bag of Nerdist products, like shampoo, facial cleanser.
I heard from numerous sources that you performed at the Wednesday, which was the Meltdown show, and you said something like, "Welcome to the brandest theater."
Yes,
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You're going to have to take a couple hits, Hardwick. You know,
wait a minute, though. I got a sec, Baron. Just let me check something out here. So you're doing your IFC show called Maren for free then?
Oh, no, I'm not talking about money.
Oh,
I'm just talking about the malignancy of the brand. I mean, I'm not even clear whether my podcast isn't on your network, is it?
You are. You've been doing great. You're it's doing on, really well
on,
for us.
It's on Earwolfist.
Does this mean I'm officially a Nerdist product?
Welcome. But you don't need any of that stuff, though. I mean, like, who was I talking? Oh, I was talking to Kevin Smith yesterday, and so we were sort of talking about, like, if there was a face of podcasting, I'm like, well, it's Mark. Mark is the face of podcasting
really?
Now. I think so. Oh. Absolutely.
I think that's very nice of you to say. I don't, the IFC thing came about in sort of an interesting way. I don't know why I just went there.
Well, because actually I do want to hear about
it. I can't handle that. Like, you know, I'm not the face of podcasting. Am I the face of podcasting?
Does podcasting have a face? It's an oral... Aural.
Well, I think that my face. Well, no, I understand what you're saying.
You can be the voice.
I am
podcasting.
Thrilled on that it worked out somehow. I mean, this was a project of pure desperation that seems to have panned out pretty well for me.
It almost sounds like that old insult. Yeah, you got a face for podcasting, kid.
Yeah, well, that's what. Yeah, that was very close to that. Yeah, you got a face for radio. Yeah, sure. Do you remember the first time you saw a guy that was that you heard on radio?
Oh, no, it's tragic. Awful.
I remember it well. I was in like seventh grade, and we all listened to Bobby Box on KQEO. He played oldies and the hits, and he came and hosted a dance at our school. And he was like a dwarf, and almost.
Wow. Is that still a good word? Can you
still
use
dwarf? No, I'm just saying.
Word.
Wow, that
he was a dwarf, and he was wearing a leisure suit, and he had too much hair. You know, like it was all spray paint. He was like, "Hey, everybody!" And we're like, "Oh my god!"
Most people in radio look like they were cast by Guillermo del Toro.
There's a guy named David Alan Boucher who did like Magic 106.7 back in Boston, and I could never find a fucking picture of him.
Probably a reason for that.
Yeah.
Or if if on that, like on the websites, when the websites started to, when you started to get visuals on people, and you'd see a picture of them, you're like, you know, it's tough to tell, but that picture looks a little 80s to me. Yeah, and then you see them in person, and they're just like fucking Crypt Keeper.
There was a good alternative station in Hawaii called Radio Free Hawaii, and I remember they were doing an event somewhere, and the Cat, like, I think every rock radio station has a girl that calls herself Cat.
Sure.
Cat in the afternoons. And then,
Is she driving the show? Because there's a difference in girls on radio. There's the ones who drive the show.
It was her show. She was
and
the
then
driver.
There's the ones who sit on the side and go, oh, fellas.
Yeah, yeah. She was a drive time. Just, yeah. No, come on, guys.
Yeah, come on. Come on, guys.
Hey, all we're trying to do is just talk about boners over here. What's the problem? You've seen those before.
Yeah, yeah. I have one.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. Put that away.
All right, guys.
So what about this Cat?
Oh, no. I went and she was really insanely hot.
Radio is kind of interesting. I have a tremendous respect for it that I never realized. Like when I used to do comedy before I did morning radio for 2 years, you'd go in, you'd be like, who's this guy? And you never knew why is he being a dick? Because he's the king of his region in that time slot. He's the morning guy.
Yeah.
And there used to be discomfort and a challenge to it. And sometimes they'd fuck you. But after I did morning radio, I realized that when you do morning radio, you're all of you are amped up. You're up at 4 a.m. and you're taking people to work. And this thing has got to go.
Yeah.
When somebody walks into your studio, all you're thinking is like, don't fuck this up. Don't fuck. We're on a groove here.
Also,
I have built something.
Also, you're a little. I did morning radio for a year in Los Angeles, and I remember being dead inside because I was so fucking tired.
Oh yeah, and when you get in a groove, you just like you don't want it to be.
They don't listen to people because you almost can't fucking listen to people because you're so like.
Got to keep moving.
And you're kind of, and you're just too tired to give it.
Like that scene in Almost Famous with Harry Shearer. Like, uh-huh,
right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Just doing the tapes, doing all the tapes and stuff. I've heard that Seacrest is like that.
What Ryan is
like? Apparently, someone had a video of like Ryan like doing an interview, but he's like changing tapes and like doing all this stuff and asking legitimate questions the whole time.
Ryan's working nine other jobs while he's interviewing that. He's literally making $1 million a second while he's interviewing that person.
Is he making $1 million right now?
Probably.
Wow, that's amazing.
Pretty crazy.
I don't know how much I'm making now. Maybe I sold a poster.
I'm losing money right now.
You are?
Yeah. Because of this, I'm not running over to my meter to fill.
But you're right, though, about the exhaustion, man, because when I was doing Air America, we were getting up. I had to get up at 2:30 or 3 because we actually had to do news. It wasn't anything you could kind of walk through. We had to crunch news because it was all politics.
Is that when you got sober?
No, I got sober a long time. Yeah. I had a long time before that, but I did get that feeling. That's the worst thing about having done cocaine at any point in your life is anytime you're up at that hour of night, you're like, you get the drips. And you're like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not. It's coming back to me. But But no, but that feeling of exhaustion that you can never, and you don't even look at the chunks of sleep as you just, all you're thinking is like, if I can get out 8 hours somehow,
yeah,
like 2 hours here and then 3 hours here. And you sort of adjusted that. But I used to say it felt like I was just in a very long pillow fight. I just felt like all kind of numb in my yeah. head, and I could not ever register anything.
Not a specific pain, but just an overall dull.
You just always feel shitty.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what time you go to bed.
No.
It's just that we are not designed to get up for work
That's
at
right.
3 o'clock in the morning.
That's
Our bodies
right.
are not designed
Tell
for that.
Tell that to farmers.
Okay.
That's right. why you got to hand it to the Good Morning Crews. I always pay my respects to radio. Without radio, we would not be doing this, fellas.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And it's funny, but a lot of them now are, you know, like, have you noticed when you go do radio interviews for, like, morning radio, like, should I be getting into this podcasting thing?
Yeah, about a year ago, you should have.
Should we podcast a radio show? No, because it's way too topically shitty.
Well, you get spoiled because those guys who have been on the air in the morning or in the afternoon for 20 years are making good coin, and they got deals with sponsors, and they're entrenched in the business community of their region, and it's a tough jump because there was that guy Marty Reamer up in Seattle. He used to be the comedy dude. He was the dude that championed Maria and Gaffigan, mm-hmm. Birbiglia, a lot of cats. He used to have an afternoon show up there, and then he left. And he started doing a live streamer in his house. And I went up and did that. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm back on the radio. You know, I mean, because it's a big undertaking. And there's a big risk for guys who are making $250,000 a year.
Yeah. And, wow. And especially, you know, it's funny when people go, why do you get the podcasting? It's like, because no one else would hire me at the time. That's right. That's what happened. I needed to do my own thing.
And also the answer is, like, because I don't want to be you. You got to cut to a Vermont teddy bear commercial. How much say do you have over what you sponsor? You know, there's this idea.
Zero.
Well, they don't. Exactly.
No, they don't.
But we do.
Yeah.
And I try not to get too resentful because there are some dudes that have such big egos out in the radio world. And I've heard, you know, something got back to me about a guy who's a big radio guy. But no one, don't try to guess who it is. But he apparently said to another comic, he's like, these podcasters, they don't even they don't know what they're doing. They don't reset their guests. And I'm like,
what?
No, because we don't have to. Because you're choosing to listen to the show. You're like, who's on this show? He said at the beginning, and I'm still listening.
Oh, my God.
Because you don't come back and go, I'm talking to Matt Myra.
If you somehow fast-forwarded to the middle of this podcast, we're here with Mark Maron.
Well, we set our show on a roulette setting, so you never know when it's going to start.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, it's the name of the fucking show.
Yeah. But you got there. Oh, what's going on with my chair?
Oh, that was the chair falling down.
No, I put my legs up like I usually do, and then I'm now.
Oh, yeah. You caught that.
I'm falling.
Oh, Mark,
I'm
please.
Falling.
Are you okay?
No, again.
He's shrinking.
And that was the
end. That's the one. That's the one. Press that one and sit. Press that one and
Where's
stand
Where's my
up.
Cereal?
It's going.
God, I miss cereal.
I had cereal today.
What's wrong with you?
What do you mean, what's wrong with me? Look at anorexic Hardwick over there. Don't even start with me, you exercise anorexic. I know what you are.
I'm doing a 60-day
Are you exercising
fast.
Right now? Tell me the truth. What's going on with your legs right now? You exercising?
No, I'm just doing something for, you know, this is fun.
That looks weird to me.
This
Why are you
fun.
On a bike chair?
It's extra funny.
It's two more miles.
You're wearing
it's two more
shorts.
Miles. I'll be good. Yeah. I'll be good, you guys. I just got to get up to 170. I just got to get to 170 beats per minute.
You know you're out of shape when, like, the day after you're like, why are my abs sore? Oh, because I had sex for 5 minutes last night.
Oh, that is out of shape. Boom, boom, boom.
That's the sound. That's the sound I made.
That's the other thing you have in radio is that 360 machine.
Oh, we have one. We just don't know how to use it. Look, it's right
here. Yeah, I have one that I stole. Oops.
I don't know. Who's gonna?
You had that sound effect machine
no
at Air America.
No one's involved at the Air America bankruptcy proceedings. Heard me say that I have a piece of equipment worth $200 that I borrowed.
I think Air America probably has more important things to do than track down their 360.
I know. Like
paying
out,
off.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but those things are actually pretty amazing machines. Like you can. Like if you got a guy that knows how to do that, you know, you can program, you can put in news segments. You can do up to like 5 or 6 minutes on each one of those buttons.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things you can do. Maybe we should get someone here who can explain it to us. That sounds like exciting radio. Yeah, maybe that'd be a hell of a podcast. He's just going to walk us through how to use a 360.
Today on Radio Free Podcast, we're going to talk about the Instant Replay 360 machine.
We should go to that podcast.
How you
class
can have a machine
Flappers.
Gun sound effect
is
for 7 minutes.
Is there a podcasting class at Flappers?
Sure is.
Yes, Pete Holmes. Yes. Pete Holmes sent me a picture of, hey, get into the exciting world of podcasting. Mark Maron, Chris Hardwick, and Kevin Smith have done it. So can you.
What's the guy's name?
I don't know.
Because
Louis Anderson.
I was talking to my partner about that, and because I'm supposed to, I've been invited to speak for about podcasting at some big event in New York, and the guy who's running it sent me an email, and he's one of those guys. One of those guys like, I've done thousands of hours worth of podcasting. I can set you up with this kit. And it's links to software for certain amounts of money. But I asked my my buddy about that. And he said that's a great sign because that means that the medium is actually legitimate when you have these crackpot consultants that used to be those guys that showed up at radio stations. Yeah. Hey, he's a consultant. What does that mean? Like, he's a con man and he's going to sit us all down with his big system that means nothing.
They look, you know, like there are people, and I don't have this particular gene, but there are people who can look at something and spot a trend and then go, other people are going to want to figure out how to do that. And even though they don't need me to tell them how to do that because it's not hard.
They're the same kind of guys that go, I'm a big picture guy. No, I'm not a nuts and bolts guy. I'm a big idea guy.
You can literally explain to someone how to start a podcast in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Press record.
But I always tell people, it's the same kind of guy who sells you vitamins. Like, you know, you buy it, right?
You literally have snake oil in there.
It's fish oil, but that's better for you. I hear snake oil good?
Yeah, it's really good. Here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks, man. I never heard
like
of that. What does it do? What does it do?
Everything. What doesn't it do?
Really?
Yeah, way too much. It makes this scrawny guy beat up this big guy.
Yep.
Wow.
No more kicking sand in his face.
Oh, I remember those ads on the back of comic books. What was that guy's name? Charles Atlas?
Charles Atlas,
Yeah. And then the guy gets all big. Like, can you embarrass me for my girl?
In 5 weeks.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. What was I just going to say?
We're talking about podcasting classes.
Oh, well, people ask me all the time, and I just say, just do yourself a favor and get the best mics you can get. That's all. I mean, what else do you need? Only thing I don't understand about podcasting is how some of them can sound like shit still. I mean, there's no excuse
don't
for
say
it.
That about Walking the Room. That's very mean.
I know, I was talking about the Nerdist.
Seriously, though, Mark has, you do have a good point, though, and some of our shows don't sound great because... If we, you know, what we started doing is, you know, getting a lot of people on the road or getting people at sound checks or whatever. And so we have this Zoom H4N device.
That's what I have.
Yeah. And so we just can't, it's like rather than go into someone's dressing room with like all these mics and set up for 10 minutes, like we just set the Zoom in the middle of the room.
No good. I'll tell you what, I can help you right now.
Okay.
Go get what I have because I use the same machine.
Yeah.
Just get two XLR cables.
We have them.
And then I use the Blue Encore 200s. They're these weird mics, a blue mic.
Blue mics, yeah. It's like an omnidirectional mic.
Well, they look cool. They're not a condenser mic, but they're half a condenser mic. Yeah. You need to set it on Phantom Power.
Yeah.
So it does have a little more pickup, and the voices sound good, but any of the ones that I do on the road, which sound pretty good, I do with those.
So do you use the internal mics on the Zoom, or do you use both? Do you record it in stereo?
No, it doesn't matter, you're only using one track, so I plug in two with the XLR cables and I hand it to the guy. I just assume that everybody knows how to hold a fucking microphone.
There's four of us, and that's where the problem comes in.
Well, you're gonna have to lose these guys.
Okay,
or
well,
something.
Guys, I'm sorry, Mark.
Sweet release.
Just like
see you, Jonah.
Just like when they told Zuckerberg to lose the in Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you guys are the. I'm sorry.
We're the. That's one of my favorite bands.
Oh no, not the.
I guess that is a problem because you're not gonna be able to avoid that weird effect.
The problem is that we can't, you know, like we all can't sit on the same on the same plane. Like it's because then it's awkward. We're all sitting like next to each other.
Unless it's an exit row.
Exactly.
Well, here, I've got an idea for you. It's a production idea. Because you can I'm going to pitch you to help your empire.
Face of podcasting.
Is that maybe you assign these guys certain things and then you kind of host it within the context of the broader cut.
Remote segments?
Right. Well, you could say like, hey, we're doing this and this is happening now. But Matt Myra talked to so-and-so and then you cut to it.
Hey.
Well,
that could be fun. That could be a lot of fun.
Matt Myra and so-and-so don't get along.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's trouble there?
Yeah, a lot of bad blood.
I got
there.
Attention with a lot of so-and-sos.
Yeah.
Some of what we started to do is just take two Zoom H4Ns and aim them in opposite directions.
It kind of doubles the shitty
just
sound.
Just to get all...
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of an expenditure, isn't it?
It was. The Zooms are cheap now. They're
$350?
Like, no, they're cheaper.
$250?
Less than $250.
Really? For an H4N?
Yeah.
Come on, you're fucking with me.
I'm not fucking with you. Mark, I'm telling you, you can get a Zoom H4N for under $200.
Wait, you're the same guy that was selling me snake oil pills.
Well, it worked, didn't it?
The Zoom H4N is one of the least user-friendly machines in the world.
Once
you figure out what you need to do with it, don't even go into that book.
Try,
when you open that book, you're like, apparently I can record my brain thinking, but I just don't know how to do it from these instructions.
Yeah.
What's Dolby Pi?
I don't even know.
Some Dolby Pi with a nice little side of vanilla. vanilla ice cream.
Are you how are you feeling about everything? Are you feeling good about everything? Are you feeling happy, or do you feel, you know, like, do you have the same kind of things I get sometimes where it's like, I hope I don't self-destruct this without realizing it?
Well, I have to, my mouth is my biggest problem, and I find what I'm happy about is that because of the podcast, because of everything that's happened in the last 2 years, is that I feel validated in the work I've put in over my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pretty good piece of the self puzzle to get in place.
Yeah.
Like, I no longer, like, the feeling, my biggest fear, I think, when I started the podcast and was like falling down a pit of self that didn't look like I was going to stop, and I didn't have any other options, was that I would just be one of those guys who people say, like, oh, what happened to him?
Yeah.
You know, like I had this horrible fear of just drifting off into anonymity and just be spoken of in that
God,
way.
He was
like,
really funny. What happened?
Good, and no one really knows the end of the
story. Those guys come up a lot in conversations with all the older comics that we
talk
about.
Just
like, whatever happened to that guy?
But see, I wouldn't be able to do comedy if I was, like, if I was going to be that guy, I would have stopped. If someone, the answer to that question with me would have been like, I hear he's working at a restaurant in Key West. Yeah. that's how I saw myself.
No, he clearly must have killed himself by now, if that's the case.
But the only thing I can say is that I feel ready to deal with this stuff. In the past, when I've had opportunities, the feeling was like, yeah, not only am I going to fuck it up, but like, I got it. Fuck. What do I do now? How is this going to work out? And the panic was just overwhelming, and I'd fuck it up. But now, like, I'm like, I got this deal, and I'm like, I'm excited. I'm like, wow, we got a year to work on this. We got 10 episodes. I got a good writer that I'm going to be working with, and the production company's there. And I feel like I can do it. I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
The fear is gone, Chris.
Well, and IFC is a good place,
and
too.
And that's as close to happy as I can be.
Happiness is the absence of fear.
That's right.
It's sort of like how black is the absence of color.
Isn't that
it's
right?
Just like,
are you happy? I'm not scared.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine was recently like went on a vacation. He never takes vacations, and he was getting a massage, which he never does. And halfway through the massage, he was like, I think I have the flu. Like, I don't feel good. Like, everything feels really droopy, and my head feels weird. And
and
what he realized was he was relaxed for the first time ages, and he thought it was something was wrong with him.
Like, I told you that story in confidence.
That wasn't you, Matt Myra.
Yeah. You're always droopy.
Would you have?
I'm looking forward to that moment. I'm actually taking. Like, I don't know when to stop. You don't either. You seem to just. I don't even know how you do it.
This was my vacation week.
Right now,
I'm so sorry.
It was. Like, I don't like. Because I've been self-employed so long, it doesn't always seem like a real job to me. Like, you just keep going. Yeah. You know,
listen,
you're up and
if I'm gonna have the fucking alcoholic gene, I'm gonna use it for something good.
Right. No, that's good. I think I'm just being spiteful because I've never been more out of shape in my fucking life. And I used to be on a pretty good gym routine, and now I'm not. So I've finally entered that slight discomfort of like, dude, you've really gone too long. And that's only a couple days from fuck you. Fuck you. And that's usually what gets me to the gym is like, you fucking disgusting. Why did you eat that?
I have that kind of a cycle of vanity where, like, you know, I'm like, just, yeah, I'll sit on like the toilet, be like, I'm piling up here. I really got to start watching what I eat. I gotta go to the gym. And then I go out and I'll want like, you know, some rice or some mashed potatoes with something I get. I go, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a comic. I'm a guy. I don't have to be good looking.
Yeah.
I don't have to be in shape. Fuck it. This is me. And then the next morning, oh fuck.
When you plow through a pint of ice cream with nothing but self hate, it's the best. Where you're just like, fuck me.
Yeah.
Fuck
yeah. 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 Yeah.
Fuck me.
Ice cream doesn't taste better in any other way.
Oh, it's the best.
It's like every night. It's
that's
like
how I got here.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you commit to two pints, like, you know, like I'll buy a pint of ice cream, like peanut butter cup, like Ben and Jerry's. But then I'm like, I gotta have a pint of vanilla to cut it. And you don't got cut.
Yeah. You're a thin guy though. You're not.
Yeah, but I'm crazy, and so are you. So what were we talking about?
And you've been, is it 15 years?
12 years and change.
12 years and change.
August, it'll be 13 years sober.
Nice.
Wow.
But I'm consuming nicotine lozenges at an increasingly dangerous
pace.
Wow,
the technology has gone up. I didn't. That's in an airborne type capsule.
No, it looks like a M&M Minis capsule. But in fact, I think that's M&M Minis.
But I've completely lost touch with the idea of the nicotine lozenge was to wean you off smoking. To me, it's just like, this is good candy. You know, like, this candy makes me feel good.
Is there sugar in it?
No, I think that I don't think it's sugar. I think it tastes like a fake sugar. But
is there anything wrong with it
other than the nicotine? And I have no idea what that can be doing to me. Like I had that fear the other night. Like I overdosed on nicotine lozenges. Like sometimes I forget how many I eat, and then I'm like laying in bed, and I've got heart palpitations and a mild sweat, and I'm like, I can't die from these. This is not the way. I can't die from an overdose.
Was that scene from
Make
You a Smoking where they just like they get that guy and they put like all the nicotine patches all over him?
That made me nauseous. Yeah, that was like horrendous. Horrifying. But yeah, I'm okay, man. I feel pretty good. I want to do good. You know, like I don't have that as much self-sabotage in me as I used to. And I really like I'm aware enough of the work and I really just want to make a funny show with that thing. And I just turned in the first manuscript of my book, and that guy seems happy. I don't even remember writing it. Like all I remember is a year and a month or two of saying, like, I gotta fucking write this thing. But at some point I did, and I wrote something. Wow. And I sent it to him, and he seems excited about it.
That's good. Do you feel like are you happy with the way your career played out, like that it, you know, that it took so long to really, really make it? Or would you rather have like made it in the early 90s?
Like, would I like to have been happy and well adjusted earlier?
Well, that's different. That's different. that's totally different.
Two wives later.
That's a whole different issue.
Yeah.
That's a whole different issue. Could you have handled a lot of success early on?
Well, no, clearly I couldn't, because I had opportunities and I wasn't in control of my talent, and I wasn't clear what it was. And I don't think I was fully formed as a person or as a comic. I was doing something. I was more angry. I was more intense. And I was alienating to some people personally and professionally. And I never had a handle on the politics of socializing, the politics of business, the idea of not being afraid on stage and being, you know, truly honest. I don't know that any of that stuff could have happened at a younger age. And certainly what I do isn't for everyone. I don't have what I would call mainstream appeal, but I seem to be attracting not a demographic as much as a disposition that seems to traverse from teenager to senior citizen. Yeah. The disposition that is appealing that I have is sort of ageless and sexless, I'm finding.
Was it your show where the club owner was like, I've never seen so many single tickets sold?
Yes. There's a lot of that. And it happens all the time. And I don't draw attention to it as much anymore, because it's always the same thing. Really what happens is when people like me, it's a weird thing that I know that they're sitting there and they had a ticket and they were excited to see me. And it came to the point where they're like, well, maybe someone will go with me. And they're like, yeah, but they don't know who Marin is. And I don't know how to explain him. Fuck it. You know, and they just go to the
one, please. Yeah.
Well, do you, something you said about you're more honest on stage now, but I've always seen you as a comic who was very honest on stage. So,
right. But honesty used as a sort of an arrogant weapon. Like some guy once said that to me. When I was very proud of copping to something to my first wife, you know, when I first got sober, I thought that part of being sober was you got to be honest with people. So I immediately told my first wife that I was having an affair, you know, because I thought that, and I thought like, well, this will end it. And he goes, you know, you shouldn't use honesty as a weapon. And I never really thought about that way. There's some things you shouldn't say, or figure out how to say them and figure out why you're being honest. So I think a lot of my honesty was just anger. And I don't think it was, you know, came from a necessarily personal or wise place. I think I was a provoker of emotions and I wanted to push people's buttons. Mm-hmm. And now, because I'm more comfortable with myself and a little more fearless on stage, I'm able to take real emotional risks up there, which was always something that I respected in my favorite comics. You know, some of them, the ones that do that, like Richard Pryor, the thing that made him amazing was that you could feel a vulnerability up there that you never saw before, that you could tell that his heart was on the line with his performances. And I think I always aspired to that. I don't know that I ever got into comedy to be an entertainer as much as I got into comedy to be visible, mm-hmm. like to be like, you know, I'm here. So like where I am right now, me being here is certainly more pleasant an entertainment experience than it was when I was, I'm fucking here. Now what?
But I do like seeing in comedy now that, you know, which is, you know, certainly different from the comedy boom. And I mean, you saw a little bit of it in the comedy boom with the Bill Hicks, you know, but I feel like now people are respecting the fact that, you know, some of the biggest comics, I mean, like guys like you and Louis, it's like, there seems to be an unfiltered like a window into who you guys are when you're on stage that's really nice to watch, as opposed to just, I'm a clown and I'm going to make you laugh no matter what. Different kinds of comedy.
I think that's true. But I also think that that type of comedy has always been sort of around, and there's never that many. You know, I mean, I wouldn't classify it as a trend. I think there have been some people that kind of spoke their hearts and their minds in a unique way. And sometimes it's hard to tell. Like, in order to get that raw on stage where you're actually taking emotional risk, you got to have a pretty decent craft in place. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of like you got to know how to write. What's the analogy I want to make? That there is a technique to this thing, and whether you know it or not, you get enough, you know, flying time, you got enough stage hours that's in place, and that'll take care of you to take that. I think that's the progress of an artist of some kind, though I'm not calling myself that. But I agree with you. I just don't. I think there's always been a minority of really great comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, at all. And it's weird. When I do reading now about, I have you ever read this guy, Cliff Nesterhoff? Do you know who that guy is?
No.
He writes a series of articles for the WFMU blog, or it's called something. But this guy's name is Cliff Nesterhoff, and he focuses on these pieces around like the 40s, 50s, and 60s, maybe in the 70s of comedy in New York, the sleazier elements of comedy. And there was always a lot of fucking comics around, especially after World War II, and there were all these supper clubs, these mob and supper clubs, and that everybody did comedy. And we always think like, well, there's a lot of comics now. Well, there were hundreds then too that nobody ever heard of.
Sure.
But I always think that there are some that just figure out a way and reveal something. Like, I think that even if you look at someone like Attell or Rodney Dangerfield, that you're seeing a pretty real thing up there. Mm-hmm. That even though they're joke guys, they're not hiding who they are at all. And that's a real trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, it's something that I respect as a, and something that I feel like I still can't do yet, and that I hope I figure out someday, because I still feel like, I'm just saying silly things that they do mean something to me, but it's not like, I don't really feel like I'm exposing myself on stage in any huge way.
But there's an argument to be made against that. You know, it's not everybody's idea of a great time. You know, even Louis, who is very raw and really, you know, puts it out there. I mean, he still structures things, you know, very comedically. I mean, you know, he's always going, there's going to be a laugh in there.
Yeah.
And I'm not comparing myself to him in any way, but like, that's not always true with me. You know, like, I could be up there revealing something and then I'll be like, oh, okay, I guess that's just going to sit there, you know, but I become hyper aware of structure and doing longer bits.
Like, I had that a while back where I was going through a bad breakup, and then I just kind of went on stage, not meaning to talk about, but it's all I ended up talking about. And I found jokes after the fact, but it was one of those things where I'm like, I'm saying this, and to me, it's funny to just be as raw as I can with talking about it, but there was no structure.
Right.
And that's why immediately I just started just kind of phasing it all out. I thought I had bits, but it was just like me fucking airing it out.
But that's something I realized is that people will laugh. You've got to learn to determine the difference between a laugh, a nervous laugh, and, yeah, and the laughter of somebody who's been
entertained. No sudden movements. Yeah. No sudden movements, anyone.
That's true.
Yeah.
Like when I did that divorce show, the what did I call it, Scorching the Earth, I was workshopping it in New York in a basement, and I was still going through it. And I was doing that show, and I didn't want it to be for press or anything else. I needed to work through the shit, and I wanted to see if I could make what I was going through funny. And Time Out New York had come to the show, and they'd written in there that I didn't want a review. I was just trying to figure some stuff out. They said, the amazing thing about this show is Maron has no hindsight. Yeah, he's actually experiencing.
Jesus Christ.
But they were right, and I'm like, well, I can't repeat that. I mean, the intensity of somebody going through something right in front of you makes you uncomfortable, and you're going to laugh at it.
Yeah.
But can you repeat that? And is it something you want to see twice?
And that's what happened. I ended up getting over it, or in that case, getting back together with her. And like, I was like, oh, these are still funny, and I did it. And it's like, almost as if they've been hollowed out.
Right.
Where there was no real passion behind it.
But that's good, because then, you know, the ideas and the feelings are still there, but the intensity, the menace of them are gone.
Yeah.
So like I'm doing jokes now about my relationship now that I think are really honest, and they're not necessarily flattering to me. And they're very specific, but I can't talk about, you know, the problems of a guy who's dating a girl 20 years younger than him. I mean, if right away people are like, oh yeah, I really feel sorry for you.
Right.
Why don't you, let me cry a few tears for you.
Well,
know?
Especially as you get more successful, because I think part of a thing that an audience likes to not feel is threatened by the person on stage in any way. And so if they feel like, well, fuck, you know, well, yeah, he's a famous guy. It's like, you know, it's just funny to watch Louis kind of dance around trying to justify on stage why he was in first class. And he's like, ah, fuck it. You know what? I fly first class. What do you want?
Yeah.
What do you want? You know?
And why wouldn't people expect him to do that? I mean, is there some sort of agreement we have with our audience that once we have money, we have to pretend to be the schlub that we were when we created the character? I mean, I wouldn't expect Louis to fly anything but first class, but I've known Louis forever. Louis would fly first class if he didn't have any money and he just had a credit card that he couldn't pay for. I mean, it's not out of character for Louis to buy a car with no money. You know, so Louis with money. I mean, I don't talk to him that much, but I can't even imagine what's happening now.
Well, I think it is interesting to sort of see sometimes on the internet, and thankfully it doesn't happen very often, but I feel like people will try to start shit between us or between
me and you,
different podcasts, or just like, hey, you know,
no, I know.
Marin got this person, you didn't get that person, or Nerdist got this, how come you didn't? And it's like, guy, what the fuck? Well, you know, like, and I, you know, I feel like it happened kind of recently, and I tried to address it, and I was like, look, we get some people that haven't been on his show, and he gets a lot of people that we haven't had on, but who fucking cares? Like, it's
well,
like...
I have several Twitter names, and...
Oh, shit.
Which one was that? I forgot what I was using.
At Matt Myra.
Yeah. It was Mark Maron with a K.
No, I don't really, you know, I have found myself, you know, I have this weird thing with trolls where I will engage, knowing I shouldn't. I do have an NTEP, a no troll engagement policy in place. But there's part of me that I somehow feel some weird small victory if I can get them to act like a fucking human, you know, within 10 or 12 tweets.
Yeah.
But usually you're just going to lose, and it kills me. I don't know how to dismiss them.
Sometimes you can do it in one, or you just go, hey, what the fuck? They go, sorry, man, big fan. I was just really trying to...
I've become very happy with blocking. I enjoy that. And sometimes I'll block people, and I won't really do it, just to see them complete, you know, still festering, you know?
Yeah, someone told me not to block people. They're like, you're just giving them satisfaction they got to you. I'm like, yeah, but I don't have to see it.
That's right. That's what I say to them now. I just say, get the fuck out of my feed, unfollow me. I don't really know what the point of this is. And sometimes that works, but I've had weird experiences with trolls.
Do you feel any sense that I mean, this might sound weird, but do you feel any sense that the kind of the mythos or the legend of Mark Maron, the sort of character of you that people have in their minds is becoming bigger than who you actually are? And is it weird when people come up to you at shows and try to connect with you in ways you're like, why did you think that's who I was?
No, because I am fairly, you know, for better or for worse, pretty legitimately honest with what I do on the air. And then they, you know, Morgan Spurlock did this piece on me for the Day in the Life thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought it represented me pretty well. So I generally believe that when they approach me with that familiarity, that they do know a good part of me.
Yeah.
You know, the things I keep to myself really are just that, you know, I do, I'm probably a lot more sensitive and shy than I come off. So that kind of stays at home because, mm-hmm. you know, that's not very interesting.
Yeah.
But is that even true? I just find, like, I try to figure out for myself, like, what the fuck do I like to do? How am I different than the guy I'm on stage? And, you know, how am I amplifying that? But it is pretty true. And my biggest thing that I'm careful of is, like, I've tried to, like, a long time ago, and I'm not comparing myself to him, but I watched Bill Clinton, you know, take pictures with people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the weirdest thing I ever saw, because my buddy used to do press events for him. So I went to an event, and there a line would form, you know, for people just to stand there with the fucking president to get a picture taken. And somehow or another, he was detached yet still present enough to kind of show up for each thing. And I thought that was, you know, very... I thought it was genuine, yet it didn't seem to freak him out. So, like, when I talk to people, I try to be, you know, very present and understand that they have a relationship with me that's one-sided, and I listen to what they have to say, and I'm grateful that they're there, and it's usually okay, and I don't feel that... I don't feel threatened, and I don't feel like it's disingenuous. It does get a little weird when someone shows up for three or four of your shows over a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I talked about that. Where did I talk about this? I talked about the other night at the UCB. Like, this woman was, you know, she brought food. She cooked me dinner at home and made enough for me and the other comics. And she came to three out of four shows. And after that, she was there the last show, the fourth show. And it was this moment where I was like, do I have to fuck her now? You know, but because there's probably 10 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, I got to fuck her. I mean, that was pretty good food.
That was good food. Came every
thanks
night.
For the
casserole. And that's what she expects. That's my biggest fear, is that I don't have boundaries enough to, you know, I got to be careful not to get too involved. And the kind of emails I get now are some of them are very compelling. They're very touching. You know, I get a lot of sobriety related stuff. I get a lot of like, you know, thank you for helping me through a dark time stuff, like really harrowing stories. And I, you know, I don't want to leave people hanging. So I try to say like, oh, I'm glad everything's all right. I'm glad I could help.
Thank you for contacting Mark Maron.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, your input is very important.
Well, that's my fear is that like I no longer can really look at all of them, and I don't want people to think I'm an asshole because I'm misrepresenting myself on that level. You really just get too busy and you get overwhelmed. But I try to be I don't feel like it's not real to them.
Well, you want to engage with everyone as much as possible because, you know, especially the medium of what we do is so personal and it is so humanizing. And I feel like that's one of the reasons why, you know, the podcasting in general has caught on because it's a very intimate and you see people in a very human way, particularly on your show. I mean, we don't go super in depth with people. You know, we try to keep it light most of the time, but you definitely, you do get down under the surface of people and expose things that that would have never been exposed in the world before.
Yeah, I don't know why that happens, but I'm happy it happens. And I think it's just because it's one-on-one. You know, we're in a garage.
Yeah.
It's cozy. And I'm pretty much a too much information kind of guy. And I've learned how to listen. I don't know when that happened. I'm happy it happened. But I seem to be, like when I was a kid, I grew up with a bipolar father. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's some part of me that's wired to emotionally connect with very charismatic, volatile people. And, you know, throughout most of my childhood, I would always be attracted to crazy homeless people that walked around where I used to work at this restaurant. I always wanted to hear their stories. I always liked people that were funny and sort of, large personalities because I'd been sort of diminished by my father's, you know, brutality in terms of his emotions. And I just find that, like, for a long time there, I was just bitter. And I just was like, oh, fuck, everyone's out to get me. And, you know, I'm defensive. And I'd gotten very cynical. And now, because of the podcast, I'm very empathetic. You know, when I listen, I there are times where I'm, you know, about to cry. Or that where I'm so engaged in the story that I'm just happy when it's like, wow, this is really, you know, I'm into this. So I think that just is my own curiosity and just the way I'm wired. But I'm very happy that that's happened. I like to listen to people.
Well, it's something that I certainly wish I did more sometimes. I'm so always like, no dead space. Always got to keep talking.
No, I think that's natural. And I do that like, you know, when there's a room full of three guys and like I was very conscious of it yesterday because I did the Ardent Atheist podcast with Emery.
Yep.
And I've been resisting that for a long time because I don't really publicly identify as an atheist. And it was me, Dana Gould, and Provenza, you know, out there in the valley somewhere. And I knew that it was just going to be some sort of weird attack and some sort of, because I'm not on the fence about where my beliefs are. But I just think that if somebody believes something, then, you know, if they're not hurting anybody, let them believe it. It's probably stopping them from pulling the plug on themselves. But these guys are like, no, it's not rational. And I'm like, you know, shut the fuck up. So, but my point being, I don't know why I had to drag it into whether there's a God or no God, is that there were three dudes, and one was Provenza, and one was Dana, and one was Emery, and there's no getting a word in edgewise, but there's that impulse. We're like, what about me? When's mine? And I literally was just sort of like, just wait, there'll be a gap. And then I was very happy about that, too. I never wait for gaps.
Well, I think with comedians, I just did it. I think with comedians, it's sort of like, If you casually walk by a dog and then run, he's going to chase you. Right. And with the comic, it's just like, they ain't going to get in there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you know the moment's going to go and you want to get your 2 cents in. But I don't know why am I the one thinking that I'm just not going to be able to speak to this because they're going to keep talking and then it's going to be over. Why do I got to be the guy that's sort of like, but you know, I got something to say too. and some people criticize me for that on my podcast that I occasionally interrupt too much. And I think that's just because they're not used to listening to interviews the way I do it. A lot of times I interrupt and it, only because like I sometimes get nervous if people are doing some, if someone's a public personality, you know, they've got these, you know, they got their story, you mm-hmm. know, and I can sort of tell when like I'm not the first one to have heard this story. Yeah. So sometimes like it happened with Anthony Bourdain, specifically because, you know, I wanted to, you know, connect with him, but he speaks in public a lot. And I'd listened to, you know, part of his interview on Joe's, on Rogan's, And only because I wanted to see, you know, what kind of person he was in conversation. Not Joe, but Anthony. And I knew there was a couple of points that he, you know, he clearly, you know, hit regularly. So when I heard him start those, I was sort of like, yeah, but what about, you know, like I tried.
Oh,
to,
yeah.
I just tried to get around them only because I
to
wanted
break
to
break his pattern.
Right. To see if I could get. And I ended up getting something different. It was good. It was good. But I'm sort of aware of that stuff. You?
I try to be aware of it, but I also, you know, I also try to keep the conversation going. And a lot of times if I'm talking to someone, and this is why I don't do phone interviews, because I need to see people, is I can tell they're close to finishing a thought.
Yeah.
And I just don't want any of those moments of like, I mean, I think if you listen to this podcast, you will almost never hear a, so.
But you know what's interesting? I learned this. You know who you learned this from? It's weird. You learn it from Rush Limbaugh. If you work, if you listen to talk radio, to guys who are really good at it, whether they're evil or not, the pause.
Well, if it was Rush, we'd have to.
What we got here?
Slut.
But just that. But like, if you hear a ruffling of paper, and he's like, "Let's take a look at this." Yeah, but no, but like nothing. That moment of nothing, you're like, what the? You know, it's actually compelling if you know how to be comfortable in those pauses.
It's tough. It's confidence.
You hear that hum.
You just hear the hum of the room.
But it's great because you have to remember how people are listening to you. They're just in their car, so they're not going to be like, fuck it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if you're sitting there going, I woke up this morning, and let me tell you, I don't know how to say this. Okay, I will. You know, you're like, holy fuck. You know, they're just some dudes that have that ego to just, you know, hold you even in silence. I find it very impressive.
I love that. I just, you know, and I don't think of these as interviews. I think of them as conversations. And
yeah,
that's just
too.
How conversations flow. But I love to sort of get swept up in the momentum of it rather than letting the momentum drop and then picking it back up. And so I think that's part of it. But maybe, you know, I'm totally happy to admit that I'm, you know, sometimes I may not be as comfortable, you know, doing what I do sometimes. And that's why I always want to.
Well, no, but sometimes when you get a groove going, it's great. I mean, that's what the, you know, great funny radio is like just that riffing. You know, there's been like when I was on with Russell Brand, like I didn't know what I was getting into because I didn't really know him and I didn't know his comedy that well. But man, like he got in there and I'm like, holy fuck, I got to get on this train, you know, and like he was going and I'm going and like an hour blows by and it's just like boom, 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 riding off each other's riffs. And I was like, wow, that was fucking amazing.
Sweet guy.
No, he's great. But I think the way you learn those skills, and the most frightening thing to me and when I did radio was hosting a 3-hour block
by myself.
Because that's where you're going to learn how to, you know, to not freak out. Is that when you're like, I got to be on the mic for how long? Just me alone? And to learn that, just to be able to talk out into nothing. I was so proud and excited when I got that skill. Like when I do my monologues, which aren't even that long, 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. I don't have any, you know, I don't freak out about it. I'm just like, oh, I'm listening to me. and I'm thinking out loud. I like this. And it's a comfortable thing.
You know, it's fun. If someone ever says like, oh, whatever, I could talk into the microphone for 3 hours. Like, try it. See if you're not, see if your brain isn't seeping out of your ears by the time you're done because you're so.
It's scary because like with the, and then all you're doing is like, when's the break? Okay, there's a break at 12 after. No, I think I can do these three things. Oh fuck! And then you're moving towards a break, and like you just segmented. It was parallel. It was really scary to host 3-hour blocks and political talk on top of it. But then there's always what radio. You're like, let's go to the phones, please. Hello,
wrong number. Sorry. Whatever. Please, we'll talk about that.
I can be who you want me to be.
Do you have a lot of wrong numbers? What do you? I'll put on an outfit. One of my favorite moments of your podcast. It's an older episode, but it's when you were trying to quit. What is it? Snooze.
Oh yeah.
And just the because I think maybe because I identified with it as someone who has been addicted to stuff. I mean, I drank and I smoked when I was young and
I remember you then.
Yeah, of course you remember. Well, you're partly responsible for why I don't drink anymore, but we've already covered that. But hearing the out loud struggle that I feel like the microphone was incidental.
Right.
It was just like, God, the snooze is in there, right? God damn it! Like, it was, and then you just wouldn't hear anything for a second, like, it's just there. I could just fucking have it.
Yeah.
You know, just that moment. I could feel, you know, I always compare addiction. It's just like, imagine 1,000 screaming birds, baby birds inside the molecules of your body begging to be fed.
That's pretty good.
And they're compelling.
Wow. Do you do that on stage?
No.
Why?
Because it's, I can't make that stuff funny. And then people just go, aw. I can't make real stuff funny. I don't have that skill yet. That's what great comics do. I'm a good comic.
No, but I mean, but all you got to do is that you can say that thing, and then like with your other personality, they're like, nee, nee. You know, you can, you know, like, ah, bah, boop, boop, bah. You know, like you just you just throw one of those at the end. Just like you're like screaming birds, like, well, I'm just gonna fucking.
What if I just took you literally and I was like, it's 1,000 screaming birds in your soul.
Meep, 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 meep. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't tell him to do it literally.
No, but you know what I'm saying? That you can, if you have the chops, you can talk about it. You can go that weird and dark and
I'm
just
working
be like,
on it.
But all you have to say is like, wow, that just happened in my head. and that's funny, right?
Yeah, that's the, yeah. You know, it's, I mean, you know, it's a good point. It's funny, you know, I feel like with comedy writing, you're constantly when you start out, I feel like you're accessing everything in the outside world. And then you start going more internal because you just run out of stuff in the outside world.
Well, maybe you should throw the pen away. I think that what happened to me, and I don't know why I'm putting my arms up in a radio.
He really threw the pen away.
I'm throwing pens.
I'm throwing many
Mark,
pens.
Your pen. You're going to need that pen to sign things.
I don't need any pens.
All right.
There are pens ever. Get that pen out of here.
Excuse me. Does anyone have a pen? I need to perform emergency surgery.
Pen away.
Well, what happened recently was like I did Jimmy Fallon, I did Jimmy Kimmel show, and I'd never done either of those shows. And I'm used to doing Conan, and I've done Letterman. But just stand up. But I used to do Panel with Conan all the time. And when you do Conan, you know, you talk to a segment producer. You tell, like, I got this bit. You're doing sit down stand up, basically. Yeah. So I go to do Jimmy Fallon. And, you know, I still hadn't talked to a producer. So I'm there for the show. And I'm like, when is someone going to talk to me? And then the producer comes in. I'm like, you know, you want to know the bits I'm going to do? He's like, no. Jimmy just wants to talk. He just wants to talk about your podcast. I'm like, but what about funny things? I need to. I had funny things prepared. Are you just going to put me on television?
Ferguson won't let you. If Ferguson feels like you're doing a bit, he'll derail you.
Yeah, but he does something different. I'll talk about that in a minute. I got upset with him. But no, so like I went out there and it was this weird moment where I'm like, wait a minute, I'm funny. I've been professionally funny for a long time. You put me in a corner, I'm going to be funny or I'm going to cry. And that hasn't happened in a long time.
Right.
And what I'm telling, the only reason I'm telling you this is that if you're naturally funny, that, you know, if when you step out on the ice, you have to assume that at that moment where it's sink or swim and you're not getting the laugh, that you're going to do something. You know, it's a natural defense of a funny person. It's like, well, this isn't going well. Maybe I should do this.
Right.
Throwing more pens?
Well, no, but if you watch someone like Conan, who's really learned how to be funny in public, you know, publicly, he learned, you know, like it took him a long time. Like there are dudes, like, you know, you look at Ferguson, very charming, and he's just going to ride it out, and he really milks everything, and he loves to hear himself talk, and he's very good at what he does, but he's got that thing. Dave, very quick, right? Kimmel, you know, is quick as well. But Conan, if he's going to get a laugh, he's going to get on a roller coaster, and he's going to, you know what I mean? Like there's a moment where you're having a conversation with him, and if he feels that there's a little bit of dead air, he's going to like, all right, here we go. and that's how he does it. But everybody's got to do it with some version of that. Ferguson, though, when I talked to his segment producer, and I'm okay with him, I interviewed him, I haven't put it up yet, but literally the guy, we're going over stuff, and he's like, okay, when's your birthday? Where were you born? What color is your hair? Was your hair always that color? Like asking all these esoteric questions, like 30 questions. Like, well, what do you want to talk about? And I gave him like 30 fucking things, and all that meant was like, I don't know what, I gave him all this shit, and then I get out there and I realize, I don't know what the fuck this guy's going to come at me with. I told him my whole life story, and then he didn't end up doing anything. It was very unorthodox, and sometimes I feel that he puts us off our guard so he can tag everything.
Maybe.
he'd throw something out, and I'd be like, and then he's like, I've watched him do interviews before. There are some interviews he does, and he's a good guy, and despite the fact that I think he's overly charming, yeah, he's very good at it. There's very few people that do long form monologues, and it's just something to see. And I like the guy, but I've seen him interview people where he literally doesn't let them talk at all. Like he'll be like, so I was saying that movie, and then it's like, and the guest just sits there and watches him. And it's hard not to watch him.
I think Craig is. You know, Craig is a guy who, you know, he has the same gene that you and I have.
No, yeah.
And he also was a guy who was in like a punk band when he was younger. And I think he's raging against the structure of network television.
Elvis Hitler.
Kind of, yeah.
That was his punk name.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
No, he was like,
that's what it is. He's rebelling against the structure, not necessarily that person.
And he's the happiest guy alive. I mean, like, you know, he never saw himself where he is. And I think he just gets a fucking kick out of doing what he does. And he pushes it. And I respect him for that.
Yeah. Would you ever want to do a nightly talk show like that?
I don't know. Not in the way they're done now. There's such a there's such a desperation to getting laughs on those shows. They become such a circus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to host a circus. Like it's not, you know, I don't think in terms of sketch. I don't want to be constantly kind of like oh my god, like what you have. Like it's been 20 seconds and no one got a laugh. I kind of like the intensity of if you ever watch the old Dick Cavett shows where you know when the guests were like Norman Mailer, Sly Stone, and a guy who invented a blender. You know that there was something about the conversation. If you listen to those old shows where they weren't, you know, they didn't have, you know, the audience wasn't on another ride at the park and they weren't just filled up with all this sort of like, let's hear clapping.
Yeah.
Where it's just an audience that sat down and they're like, I guess the show's starting. That, you know, it seemed more human. It seemed more organic. But, you know, you watch it in the context of regular television that we know now. You sit there and go like, what's going wrong?
Well, Dick Cavett never made it about himself, really. I mean, he did. Sometimes he did. But he didn't make it about himself in the sense that he was masterful at just sort of getting the ball in the air and getting that, like his Bette Davis interview is fucking amazing. And all the stuff with Groucho and, but he just like, he just nudges them enough to get going and he sits back and then as soon as they're done, he'll go, and then how about that other thing and then they start talking again and he just sits there. He's a fucking listener.
But he's also very funny. I mean, he was very dry, but he was funny.
Yeah. Well, I see that. I noticed that, I feel like, in later episodes of the show where I think he's kind of figured that out or got more comfortable or whatever.
I just like when people can talk and that, like, it just seems that, like, you know, when you have a talk show that the priority is comedy and anything else is like, it's just people that need help sitting with somebody who's giving them help. Yeah, that they're these formats, you know, that when people are talking honestly about themselves, it's always the format of like, well, my husband left. And it's like that type of talk show that they never cross over.
Yeah.
And then like if you're really energetic and really raw, then you're being taken away in handcuffs or you're part of some other type of show. I don't know what's happening with entertainment, but I feel dirty when I watch Hoarders and I can't stop watching.
Oh, I just start cleaning. That's what I do.
No,
that keeps my apartment clean.
I just know that impulse of like I really can't give you this.
Do you ever worry that you're gonna watch someone with a weird, like some sort of a weird personality affectation, and you're gonna absorb it?
No, I used to do that all the time because I think that's sort of a shaky sense of self. Like I've had, like I do this thing with my nose. That like, I don't do it anymore, but I consciously picked it up from a roommate. This dude had this weird twitch where he like move his nose and like he'd bend. You see this? Like
yeah.
That? And this guy did that, and I picked it up. I'm like, how the fuck did that happen?
I thought that when I push my glasses up, like sometimes when I don't have my glasses, I do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this just a thing I do? I just don't really need to do it? And then I was like, no, you asshole. You just can't see, so you're pushing your glasses up. When you don't have them on, you can't fucking see.
Well, it's still, people still get into patterns, though. Like, they do those, like, they do all those experiments where, like, in an elevator, they cover up the numbers, and then people still look up.
Why would they do that?
I had a doorman, in an apartment building years ago, like, in the early, when it was at 95 or something in New York. This guy's name was Lee. And you talk to him, and he would say something, and then you go, oh, really? You go, what? Like it was almost like it was an extension of the conversation, but there's this weird habit, like, what? And he was basically saying, right, but he was saying, what? And I picked that up, and I haven't shooken it. I'll hear what someone says, and I'll still go, what? It's weird.
It's weird. Well, I think especially, though, and I don't know if this is, maybe it's the comedian side, but comedians particularly are hypersensitive individuals. And I think, you know,
I resent that you said that. It hurt my feelings.
I'm going to purposely give you an affectation. You're like, damn you, Hardwick. But I think it's just the nature of what we do to observe and absorb and process. And I think that's kind of,
we're completely insecure individuals that feel incomplete as human beings. So we try to, take on other people's traits because they seem to be better than we are.
It's funny when you talk, it's funny when
they are better than we are.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well-adjusted people just don't want to do stand-up. No. There's no reason that they want to.
I've met a couple. You know, like Rob Riggle is a pretty well-adjusted dude.
He's pretty great. And, you know, he's pretty solid.
Like, I've had to throw out that whole, like, you know, comedy comes from darkness and turmoil and inner pain, because I've met some pretty well-adjusted funny people, and it just shattered that. They're not all stand-ups. Mostly they're not. They're usually scheduled. Like, Tom Lennon's a fucking well-adjusted dude.
Yeah.
You know, this is weird. I can actually name most of the well-adjusted. It's a small group, but, I mean, they're out there. They're out there.
It's only,
that just makes me more angry.
Does it?
Yeah, just like, oh, come on, what?
Yeah.
You get to be well-adjusted and that funny?
That's true.
Well, I think those of us who are fucked up are still, we're sort of fighting for our territory in comedy, because I think since the age of medication and, you know, there's really, like, I think a lot of times, I've said this about Richard Lewis a lot, I said that there's a type of comedy that I think, because of the way psychology has gone, it's sort of, you know, neutered it a little bit. Like, because there's a point where you're like, hey, really, he still hasn't dealt with this shit?
You can just take a pill.
Yeah, exactly. But he won't. And he's beautiful and he's hilarious. But that whole thing, like, I wonder if audiences, when you're that kind of comic, are they sitting there going like, really, hey, he should really help get help for this?
I saw him 20 years ago. I was hoping he'd figure this out by now.
Well, I think you do figure something out.
Who has surprised you the most? Do you have, like, on your show, who surprised you the most in the sense of, you know, they came in and you thought you kind of had many.
So there's like people ask me this a lot about who is my favorite episode. Like, I'm rarely not sort of surprised, but I think that these happen pretty close to each other, between Norm Macdonald and Stephen Wright, because I had similar fears going into both of those. Like, I'd never really talked to Norm. I'd never really talked to Stephen. And a lot of times when I talk to people, it's really the first conversation I've ever had with them. So I may have seen them around, but my relationship with them is really just like any other fans. It's that I know their work. So when Stephen Wright was coming to my house, I was like, does he even talk? I mean, does he talk like a person? And we had the greatest time. He's a very sweet guy, and, you know, he likes to laugh. There's nothing better than fucking being with a comic that you can make laugh, because that to me is like, when I'm doing a show one-on-one and we're both laughing, I'm like, holy fuck, we've really achieved something here. But he loved to laugh, but he kept laughing off the mic and covering his mouth. I'm like, no, come in.
Let them know.
Come in. You are a laugher.
I fucking earned that laugh.
And Norm was completely surprising. Like, I couldn't believe how candid he was, and how self-aware, and how open he was about his personal struggles. After I interviewed Norm, thinking the same thing, like, does he talk differently than, like, because his jokes are very staccato and they're very dry and they're kind of, you know, bizarre. And I thought, like, I don't know if I can do an hour like that. And he came in and was like, we were into shit, man. We were into literature. We were into his gambling problem. We were into, like, his struggle with faith and all this stuff. And when he left, I was like, I literally was on the phone with my producer. I'm like, we got to put this up now. something happened in there.
That was a good episode.
What was...
wild, right?
Yeah. I was at his house when he showed up, and I was like, weird, you're fucking just a dude.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Well, especially with a guy like Norm, who... his comedy persona is very, it feels like a brick wall between what he does and who he is. Cause I get a sense that he's this guy that does these crazy little jokes, but there's nothing, doesn't really feel anything personal about what he does. He's just funny.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, to have something like that.
He was great. I mean, it was like, yeah, exactly. So that was kind of mind blowing. There's been a lot of moments that I really remember, you know, as being like, whoa. But sometimes they're just small moments. I mean, even, you know, Molly Shannon, you know, when she was talking about her parents, about her mom and the car accident and stuff, and like, even there's always a moment. Like, I had John Glazer on. When I don't know when you're putting this up, but he'll be on Monday. And, like, you know, he was talking about adopting his second child, and, you know, he got choked up. That, you know, I was so defensive for so long, and I was so preemptively hostile to so many people that I don't know if, like, these people, like, I never had these relationships where people would even feel comfortable talking to me about that kind of stuff until 5 years ago.
Right.
You know, because I was always like, oh, fuck, Maron's here. There, it's going
to
suck.
And now you're the fucking guy to go to when people want to, like, you're almost the therapist for people to come on.
Now that Mark's here, let's all come out of the closet.
Oh!
Well, that one wasn't as surprising because, you know, we had to prepare that. When Todd came out, there was a lot of phone calls. Like, no, I'm going to do it, man. I'm going to do it. I'm looking at right after New Year's. I just get a few things in place. And
you know, it was funny because someone was like, how come Todd didn't come out on your show? When he, I'm like, because Marin's the right show, first of all.
Well, I think he thought that. That's why he approached me. I think he, like, it served a dual purpose. Like,
the same reason Todd didn't do it on his own podcast.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So when I found out that, because I found out before it went up, I heard like, oh yeah, Todd came out of Marin. I was like, well, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense.
Well, he wanted
that
to make sure that, you know, like, you know, I guided him a little bit and that I was, you know, and I was nervous about that. I mean, I'd never dealt with that situation. And I also wanted to help him, you know, stay on, you know, what he wanted to say, because Todd can go, you know,
yeah.
And also I think it served a dual purpose, is that he really didn't want to, he was ready to come out, but he didn't want to have to email everybody.
Right.
So he thought that, like, you know, if I could maximize the number of people,
just a smart bomb.
Sorry, right,
right,
spam.
Right, but it was pretty funny. Like, occasionally he's funny. Like, I got a couple of calls, like, you know, within months after him being on the show, and he says, "I think I just wanted to check in and tell you that it's still good." but it's therapy for me too. Like, if I go a week without interviewing people, I get squirrely, because I think that, like, conversation and just honest talk with people is very nourishing to you as a person. It,
sure,
it gets you out of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's an old, you know, like, recovery trick too. It's like, you got to get out of your head. And I'm a very heady guy. So when I'm listening to somebody else, you know, I'm out of me and I'm in that, and it's very nourishing.
So what's next? Do you have any? What's next in terms of, you have the book coming out, and I know the show's coming out in the fall of 2013.
Right there, and I'm not sure when the book is coming out, but it's next year. And yeah, I'm just gonna keep doing this, and you know, and I'm touring a lot, and I enjoy doing comedy more than I ever have, and I just need to keep generating. That's, I'm very tired. because there's that thing is, like, when you talk as openly as I do about yourself, it's sort of like, well, my life is pretty much out there, so I'm going to have to start throwing myself into situations outside of my house in order to keep things
well, but
lively.
It's very important that you, I think it's very important that you recognize, which you said you had, that comedy doesn't always, you don't have to be a broken
right.
soul to do comedy, because, you know, as you're getting all these things that I assume you had strived for so long, and you're finding happiness in your life, and you're finding comfort in ways you never had before,
yeah,
that, you know, is there any sort of like, oh, if I'm happy, where's the funny going to come from? Like, are you still comfortable, like, just knowing, like, yeah, you'll still be funny, even if you're happy,
yeah,
you'll be okay.
No. Yeah, I don't really think like that. I don't feel like I need turmoil, but I need, you know, fresh thoughts, you know,
yeah.
So I need to put new things in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like reading a book or having someone tell me something that blows my mind. I like to have my mind blown. And I like laughing, too. Like, I had this weird experience up in Grand Rapids. I did the Gilda Fest up there, you know, the
yeah.
comedy festival. And it'd been a long time since, like, I really went out. They had this competition where all these, you know, there was a bunch of young comics doing it. And I just had one of these moments where I saw this dude, and I'd met him in New York years ago when he must have been, you know, much younger. And I barely remembered him. He used to book a room with another comic in New York when I lived there. And, you know, I was just watching all these cats do comedy, and they were people I'd never seen before, like Chad Daniels.
Chad's great.
Yeah, and I'd never seen Nikki Glaser really work.
Yeah. She's
awesome. And then there was this dude, Nick Bargatze, and I was like, holy fuck, where the fuck did this guy come from? I watched four sets, and I laughed every time. And I'd forgotten what that felt like, just to be like, oh, my God, this dude's funny, you know, because we all get so familiar with each other around here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We see each other, like, every week, or like, right. Oh, there, yeah. Okay,
that's the thing he does.
Yeah, and I had not seen this guy ever, and it was interesting, because it was weird, because I had that feeling like, I got to go hang out with that guy. You know, he's probably funny all the time. You know,
oh, that's great though. And that probably, is he a young guy?
Yeah, he's pretty young. He's probably what, 31? You know him?
I know the name. I think he's done Meltdown before. The name Bargatze sounds.
I think he's done Conan like twice. But like, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't like, you know, involved in some sort of weird man crush. So I went online to watch his other shit, and I laughed at home. So nice. That seals it.
But he's in his 30s, right?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. You're funny too.
You're comparing yourself.
I find you very funny.
Yeah,
but when I'm 31, oh, watch out.
Nothing better, like, than the comparative timelines.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, like, he does long form stuff, and it's very articulated, and, you know, he takes his time. He doesn't accommodate the audience with any sort of panic about whether or not they're going to get on board. Chad Daniels is like that too.
Yeah.
Great comic, tells long form jokes. I just, like, you rarely see people do long form shit. And yeah. and I find it completely compelling. Like I wrote a bit that it took me months to work out, that airplane thing. Like I've really started, like I watched Bill Cosby himself like within the last couple of years, and I finally understood that, like, hey, it's up to us. You know, if we're funny people, it's our stage. We can do whatever we want. And you know, he's doing these bits that last 10 minutes. I'm like, I'm going to do a 10-minute bit. So, like, I've become very, you know, conscious of trying to build out things. So not only, it's not about unhappiness with me now. It's like, how can I expand a moment or a series of moments into something like the comics that I used to really like used to do? You know, if you listen to Pryor or even some of those early Woody Allen stuff or Shelley Berman or, you know, any of the older guys, Bob Newhart, is that, you know, there's this idea, like I get very upset when people go, well, you're a storyteller. I'm like, that's stand up. I don't know where, you know, this idea that there's this separate world for storytelling. It's like, listen to any great stand up. That really had a personality, they're doing long form bits. Mm-hmm. You know, jokes are jokes, but the real challenge is to do these long form bits. So when I see you guys do it and do it well, I'm like, that's spectacular.
Yeah.
Like there's like Chad Daniels is like, he'll do like these long things, you don't know where they're going. They're perfectly reasonable family observations, but it all seems seamless and it's just a long piece of material. I love that.
Yeah, and those guys too, like, you know, Chad's one of those guys that just moved to the middle of the country where it was inexpensive and just fucking toured so hard.
Yeah, I'd never met him. I'd never seen him before.
Yeah, I've done a bunch of shows with him. He's great. He's and really nice guy too.
Yeah, he was. Like, and of course, like this is old me. Like I get to that thing and I'm like, why is that guy giving me stink eye? You know, and like I went up to somebody, man, what's up with that Chad Daniels guy? I think he's giving me fucking, you know, stink eye. And they're like, he's the nicest guy in the world. I'm like, I don't think so. Like, that's who I am. Like, you know, like, I pick the nicest guy at the place and I decide that guy's fucking with me.
Fuck that guy.
What's he doing?
Yeah, and we hung out. He's the nicest guy in the world.
So what do you, just really quickly before we let you go, what's your, is there anything you can tell people about your show yet, or do you?
Well, it's a single camera, it's a scripted show. It's I got a deal, we're going straight to series. We did a pilot presentation, and that sold the show. We're doing 10 episodes in the fall of next year, and it's going to be a single camera scripted show. The podcast, you know, it's all going to be elevated because it's not going to, sure. It's not a documentary. It's not the podcast on TV. You know, the primary characters in the pilot were, you know, Ed Asner played my dad. I hope he can do it in the series. You know, Seth Morris was my producer and I had someone play my girlfriend. And, you know, I don't know how
Angela Trimmer.
Yeah. I don't know how the casting's all going to pan out or what happens now because I've never done this before. But we're going to start talking about, you know, showrunners and that kind of stuff. But it is going to be a scripted show.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's that.
Wow. Well, congratulations, and you know I weekly I'll sort of go onto iTunes and go, where's everyone at? All right, good. Mm-hmm. And I do still like seeing
just weekly, huh?
It really is just weekly. I swear to God it is
weekly.
You're
too busy exercising. I'm sure if you weren't on the
what? It's fucking 10.
It's a good core.
It's two more. It's good core. It's fucking two more. Yeah. Hey, you hand me some muscle
milk
over there.
So what was the end of that story and your weekly visit to iTunes?
That I just like seeing that, you know, that we're all still, like, around each other. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of like seeing the relationship to the handful of shows that are always sort of circling each other. Like,
here's my experience when I turn on, when I look at iTunes, only weekly as well. it just so happened that my weekly visit was today three times. And, here's what I do. Here's usually experience. I'm like, fucking Nerdist? Oh, man. Oh, who's that guy? Who put that out? Nerdist put that out. What's this show? Fucking Nerdist? Yeah.
Well, let's see. What do you have in the
show? Wait.
Fucking Feeb.
Hey, shut up.
What I meant to say was like, and then I didn't finish it. Oh, good for Chris.
Yeah.
No. I mean, it's so petty because, you know that's meaningless, right?
I do. But also, it's like.
Listen to me. Like, right, you do, right? You know it's meaningless, number one guy today?
Are you talking to yourself?
Hey, number one guy, do you know it's meaningless?
It's meaningless, but it's not meaningless. We have no other way to gauge what we do.
No, like, you do. You can look at your numbers at your server.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I mean, looking at numbers is how we gauge things.
I never do that. I'd rather look at iTunes, which is an algorithm that is like, I don't even understand.
Yeah.
I don't even understand the equation, but that's what I'm going to base my anxiety on.
I think daylight savings and leap years have something to figure out.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, the relation of the servers to the magnetosphere.
Spring solstice, everything goes up.
In all honesty, like, despite my pettiness and like weird jealousy and my own paranoia, you know, I always have a good time with you, and I don't really have any real aggression.
It's fun, you know, aggression.
It's not. I mean, if you were to call me during the day at the wrong moment, it would not be fun for either.
Sure. Okay.
But I do know that, like, I'm thrilled to be part of this medium, and for me, you know, the growth of this medium and the freedom we have as creative people is phenomenal. And I my biggest problem is with people who are already trivializing the medium, and like, you know, the competition is not really that essential. It's just like I still have the personality of a kid who always feels left out, and you know, I'm clearly not that kid anymore, but there's reactions in me that I'm like, why are all those guys doing, you know?
Yeah.
So you know that gets the best of me. But look, I think it's amazing that we've built these things and that the medium's still growing. I think our main priority as podcasters, oddly, is that, you know, when you really look at the biggest numbers that anyone's getting, like, you know, even like
This American Life is it.
Right. But you know, there was an article recently that really sort of like let the cat out of the bag in terms of how big his numbers were.
Like, I read that. Right. Like almost like 800,000.
Right, but that's nothing. I mean, in the context of the media world.
Sure.
I mean, it's very small. So, like, in my mind, it's like I'd like to bring more people to what we're doing, since we're doing something that's never been done before and we have this freedom. Yeah. So, like, in my mind, it's like, you know, how do we get people to, you know, to just make the jump? Like, there's still people that aren't that much older than us, and some people who are our age are like, how do you fucking get a podcast? Are you fucking kidding me? like there's some sort of weird...
Do we really have to just... Does everything have to be spoon-fed, like brought to you by a fucking robot?
Yeah, so I'm just excited. Like, I had a guy write about me in the AV Club who was sort of like, you know, are we learning too much about
this? I read
it. Right, and I got furious
about
that. The
bubble, the podcast bubble article.
Yeah, but it's like, what are you talking about? You're talking to a small world of people. Most people have no fucking idea who most of us are.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, I'm getting a little tired of Paul Duncan. Well, how much Nerdist do we need? It's like, you went to three shows in L.A. that were free. Free shows. You know, you're not even paying to see comedy, and there's a bunch of unbilled comics, and you're like, oh, I've already seen this. You know, what the fuck? There's an entire country out there that we'd love to have involved with this thing.
Well, also, there's the idea of, like, you know, you are actively pursuing a thing that you care about, and you're doing a lot of work, and you're putting something into the world that wasn't there before, and then someone else comes along, and it's just they send off the sidelines, and they go... Yeah, like I
hate those fucking people because they're parasites. It's like they need to fill content, and their content is based on shitting on things when they find the next thing. And I'm telling you, the space in between things is way too small now. I mean, it used to be like, here's a thing, and then a year later, it's like, here's a new thing. Now it's like, here's a thing. 3 days later, you're like, oh, that thing's tired. Here's the new thing.
Old.
And they're like, that's not criticism. That's just feeding.
Well, you just want to get, like, for me, it's just like, don't just stand on the sidelines and criticize things. Like, go out and make a thing. Like, go out and put something positive into the world.
I made this blog post.
Or celebrate the fact that, like, my whole reaction to that was, like, you're looking at something that is more strangely democratic than anything. It's like, it's got all of the free market principles with absolutely no money involved for most people.
Right.
So instead of saying, like, I'm a little tired of these guys, there's thousands of podcasts. Go find the fucking gem. Go find the needle in the haystack. You know there's some guy out there sitting in a basement doing something amazing. Celebrate that. Do a little fucking homework. Don't just stay in the fucking, you know, 2-block radius and complain that you're tired of walking around them.
Yeah, and also there was the bubble bursting, and I love that you made the point. It's like, yeah, most people, like, my father doesn't fucking know what a podcast is. I still haven't really been able to explain it to him. Like, most people in this country, the fact that they're writing that there's a bubble kind of makes me think, like, oh, maybe it's gonna tip soon. I still don't think it's tipped. In our tiny insulated world, it feels like, oh, it's changed everything, and maybe to a degree it has, but it is still not mainstream.
Not at all.
By any stretch.
Not at all. And I don't know what it means for it to be mainstream necessarily, but
maybe it doesn't need to be.
Well, someone's going to figure it out. I mean, probably you. But
I think Gervais did. Everything else is just, you know, underground.
Well, no, I just think that there's a lot of, like, sort of, like, true renegade shit going on.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's a really fun time.
It's a real kind of DIY garage kind of deal. And no one knows. Like, a lot of people think, like, well, all you got to do for a podcast, just, you know, set up mics and talk. Well, yeah, you might not be compelling, but you might find a few people to listen to you. But not unlike indie rock, there's got to be shit out there where I don't have time to find it. And that's why I want critics to do their job. It's like, instead of sit there and go, like, I'm bored, why don't you fucking sit there for a weekend and go find some wild shit shit and present it to you, to somebody who can take it somewhere or celebrate something that's like, wow, this is amazing and no one's ever heard about this guy. You're telling me they're not out there?
Someone find the Nirvana of podcasting.
Please. So I can resent them.
Mark Maron, thank you so much for coming back on again. It's been too long, sir, and we're thrilled to have you back on. And please, thank you for doing what you do, because you help legitimize this medium that we're all in. And you know, like every time you get Norm to open up, or every time you get someone else to come on, and like it just kind of raises the water a little bit for everyone. So
cool.
So thank you. I'm seriously not trying to kiss your ass when I say this, but I sincerely appreciate what you're doing.
And thank you, Chris. And I appreciate you. And I'm sorry if I am I'm a dick sometimes.
No, you're a huggable Grinch sometimes. It's an adorable.
That's the name of my new CD.
It's also your rapper name.
Yeah. Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by the Nerdist channel on YouTube. Click now, subscribe, so you can get updates and videos from stuff that will be relevant to your interests. I promise. YouTube.com/Nerdist. Go right now and click subscribe. I < 3U.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.